Hey, welcome back to the Sports Ticket. Wade Gershon with you. It is a Thursday, and it's time to be joined by the voice of the KU Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency there in Beloit. The Jayhawks off to a 1-0 start, pulling away in the second half in week one, again, their season opener at home against Missouri State. And listen, Brian, I'm not going to try to fake my way through this this one. I did not see any of the ball game on Friday because it was on High School Football Friday night, and I have high school games to call. I've read about it. I've seen some highlights, so I'm going to really rely on you to give me a real accurate description of what you saw. I do know that Jalen Daniels did not play in the game. Jason Bean, it seemed like, played very well. Highshaw had a touchdown run in the game. A lot of offense, as you predicted last week for this team, 521 yards and 48 points in the ball game. So help me out. What jumped out to you, and how did you feel about that performance for the Jayhawks last Friday night?
Well, I think outside of a little bit of a sluggish start, I think you look back on all three phases and feel really good. You know, the Jayhawks actually got off to a 7-0 start, but then gave up 10 straight points and found themselves trailing to an FCS opponent for a little bit. But that was in part due to a fumble by Daniel Highshaw, who hadn't played in 11 months. And then you give up a personal foul penalty on the ensuing drive that kind of fuels the touchdown score for Missouri State. But other than that, I really felt like Kansas put the hammer down. I mean, you're talking about an offense that winds up scoring 48 points, four different running backs score touchdowns. Bean looked really good by and large. And the defense gets nine tackles for loss, two takeaways. They only were on the field for 15 snaps in the second half. That's how quickly they were getting off the field. And so really, you know, it was that midfield fumble by Daniel Highshaw that fueled any spark or any sign of life out of Missouri State. Other than that, I think Kansas did a pretty good job of playing from out in front and having them at more than an arm's distance the bulk of the night. So a lot of good things to build off there, but let's make no mistake. I mean, while we certainly respect Missouri State, and they're going to be a good FCS team, this Illinois team won eight games a year ago. They led the nation in scoring defense. They had three players in their secondary drafted at the NFL, including the number five overall pick, but still bring back defensive linemen that are both preseason All-Americans. And so this is a much, much stiffer test. This is a big boy ball game right out the chute. And so as we anticipate a hopeful return of Jalen Daniels, and again, nothing concrete on that just yet, but trending that direction, obviously, you know, we're hoping that he comes back just in the nick of time and you get that nimble, quick on his feet, great escape artist that can make something out of nothing in the offensive backfield, because chances are he's going to have guys breathing down his neck throughout Friday night. I do think the Kansas O-line will protect him better than what they could have a year ago, as that's a vastly improved group. But this will be arguably the best pass rush that Kansas faces all year. So if indeed JD's back, welcome back, Jalen. It gets real, real fast.
Yes, it absolutely does. And it's kind of that cool little nugget I saw there in the story on KUAthletics.com is that Devin Neal scored on the very first play last year, his first touch for a touchdown, did it again the other night to start the season. First guy to do that in the FBS level since 2012. That's kind of a weird stat, but that's pretty impressive that you better be ready to go when Neal gets the football, huh?
Yeah, and you would expect that guys doing that were having their first carry from inside the 5-yard line both times.
Yeah.
But 48 yards in Friday's case. I think it was a 17-yarder last year. So, yeah, very impressive stuff. And he just continues to show why we feel like he's one of the best running backs in the Big 12 Conference and has a chance to go all the way to the NFL one day. This is the former number one overall prospect in the state of Kansas, and many thought he'd be very good collegiately. But I'm not sure we expected, you know, a 1,000-yard season as a sophomore, a preseason first-team All-Big 12 distinction heading into his third year. I mean, he is, in so many's eyes, you know, ahead of where he was even projected, and that's coming from a guy that was hyped pretty heavily. So hopefully that keeps coming. Hopefully, you know, Highshaw is the great 1-2 punch that we expect him to be. I thought he bounced back later in the game with a really nice 24-yard touchdown run where he broke multiple tackles and did Daniel Highshaw-like things. And for those of you that are youngsters listening, and if you're listening, you're probably skipping school, so I don't know who I'm talking to. But Leipold gave a really good explanation on Hawk Talk on what happened with the Highshaw fumble fundamentally, and how they teach their guys to always make sure your wrist is above your elbow and the ball is tight against your chest. If your wrist is ever below your elbow, you're vulnerable. And that's what happened on the Hyshaw fumble. And it's his second touch of the football in 11 months. First game back after a pretty gruesome injury. And, you know, when that happens, you come off the sideline, he probably felt down in the dumps, and the coach immediately puts his hand on his shoulder pad and says, son, you're going to get it right back. Just stick with it. Keep those wrists up. You know, you got this. And sure enough, later in the game, 24-yard touchdown run where he's bouncing off guys and carrying guys with him into the end zone. And so I thought that was one of the cooler stories as well. And then I'll give you one last one since you didn't have a chance to watch the game. Maybe you saw it on social media. Maybe you read about it. But for those of us that are a little bit longer in the tooth, that remember the original Kwame Lassiter back from the Aloha Bowl era in the 90s, you know, his oldest son, Kwame II, is now a member of the Cincinnati Bengals practice squad, which is really cool. His next son, Quinton, he has twins, actually, after Kwame. But Quinton, one of those two twins, is a defensive back for KU. And obviously, the late, great Kwame Lassiter Sr. passed away 4 years ago. And so those two brothers are even closer than ever. And Kwame, with his schedule with the Bengals, having camp wrapped up, had an open weekend and was allowed to come back and be on the sidelines. Probably the only time all year he'll get to watch his little bro. And he told them before the game, hey, give me an interception, man. And here's the problem. Quinton's never had an interception. He's been a, you know, third-string secondary guy for a while, but he's been emerging in the preseason. Well, Hollywood couldn't script a better story than this. Quinton breaks on a ball in the fourth quarter, picks it off on the same sideline that his brother Kwame is standing on with his, you know, I'm an NFL guy sideline pass, and is 10 feet away from his brother when he picks it off. So he just marches right to his brother, sticks the ball in his chest. And you have to think Kwame Sr. smiling down from heaven looking at that as those two share a really special embrace. And mom's in the stands. There's not a dry eye in that family. And just really cool stuff. You couldn't script it any better.
That's pretty cool. Thanks for sharing that. Well, and overall, before we get into the Illinois game a little bit more specifically, you know, you and I talked about how the offense should be powerful. The defense has question marks. I mean, what could you take out of the game defensively looking at KU in their season opener against Missouri State?
Well, you know, we talked about on last week's report the importance of getting a pass rush with Nolani Phelps this year. And I thought Austin Booker, the transfer from Minnesota, showed some of the flashes that we hope to see out of him. Jeremy Robinson is ready to take that next step and be a game in, game out, down in, down out, you know, guy that is probably your most trusted rusher off the edge. But I thought guys like Booker and a couple others in the reserves showed some pressure in the opponent backfield. And when you have nine tackles for loss, everybody's getting in on the act. I mean, we saw Marvin Grant make a couple of big plays behind the line of scrimmage. He's in the secondary as a safety. So we saw the Jayhawks really be disruptive in a lot of ways. And you know, for those that missed it, whether you had high school football or otherwise, Brian Boylan, the defensive coordinator, was not there. He had a medical procedure that, you know, that the timing was unfortunate, but it needed to be done. And so for the first time in 17 years, Lance Leipold didn't have Borman standing next to him on the sidelines. And Jordan Peterson filled in as defensive play caller. And, you know, by and large, they you know, pulled off the game without a hitch. But great to see Brian back in the office the next day. He's been to practice every day this week, and he'll be coaching come Friday, versus Illinois. But that was kind of a bizarre thing that we found out about 30 minutes before kickoff that he wasn't going to be there. So I thought the defense performed very admirably, especially without their leader there. And all the players you would expect to come back and do the stuff that they've proven they can do, I think largely did that. I mean, Rich Miller was solid in helping pace the team in tackles. Hayden Hatcher did a great job at defensive end. Kobe Bryant gets a pick after three of them a year ago. Kenny Logan's making stops. It was pretty much the usual suspects. But then guys like Booker, that are some of the new faces you want to see emerge, did flash. And so against an FCS team on your home field, I think we got what we wanted to see. But we're fully understanding that this week, you know, it gets ratcheted up big time. And so while Illinois may have lost some personnel to the NFL at running back and quarterback from a year ago, they just scored 30 versus Toledo and have a pretty talented team with a dual threat quarterback we'll talk about in a second, which means this Kansas defense is about to get one of the stiffest tests, you know, they're going to have here in the first 6 weeks of the season coming up here in about 24 hours.
Brian Haney, the voice of the KU Jayhawks, brought to you as always every Thursday here on the Sports Ticket by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Midland Boulevard, or call them at 738-5701. All right, the matchup against Illinois, and it's the first time that KU and Illinois, well, played in Lawrence since when you and I were kids, 1892. KU won 26-4, and it's the first meeting between the two since 1968, also back when you and I were young. Oh, that's right, we weren't born yet. There's not much of a history between these two programs, but Illinois certainly had a good year last year under Brett Bielema, 8-5, and they barely won their week one opener against Toledo. I was listening to that on the radio, 30-28 on last second field goal. So you mentioned that they have experience. You mentioned this would be a major step up in competition. What else can you tell us about Illinois that maybe concerns you or causes problems for KU coming up tomorrow night in week two?
Well, I just think it's a really well-coached team that, yes, got gutted by the NFL draft in some regards. But like I said, they still bring back two All-American defensive linemen that have, you know, major pro potential and prospects in the likes of Randolph and Newton. They're both preseason Walter Camp, Bednarik, you know, Nagurski Award watch list type guys. And in the case of Newton, I mean, he's on literally every first-team All-American list you can find. Randolph on a third-team All-American list. But these are the guys you fear the most. Offensively, I like their receivers. I feel like they've got the Luke Grimm type guy in Casey Washington. He made a big play to save the game versus Toledo on 4th-and-2. But they've also got a couple of guys that have, you know, that next level type athleticism. Pat Bryant is a 6'3", 200-pound receiver that had scored 2 touchdowns versus Toledo. And then they have a converted quarterback that's now a receiver, Isaiah Williams. He was a 5-star top 50 overall recruit, not at his position. I mean, all players in the nation as a quarterback. They've converted him to a receiver, and we're talking great speed, great after the catch, good separation, really special talent, Isaiah Williams. So when Altmyer drops back to pass, there's a myriad of good options to throw to, but he can also take off and run with his feet. He's a transfer from Ole Miss. And in talking with their play-by-play team, they didn't really know what they had with him in the spring. He dazzled in the spring game, but hey, it's a spring game. It's not the real deal. And didn't know what to expect, you know, after just posting some really small statistics. I think he threw about 50 passes last year at Ole Miss, not a prominent player. But what he showed in that first game versus Toledo was a guy that has got some moxie. He can stand in the pocket tough and take a hit, or he can tuck and run and beat you with his legs. And he came up with that big throw on 4th-and-ball game that extended it on a 33-yard hookup to Casey Washington. He came up with numerous big conversions. And so as last year's quarterback Tommy DeVito is off to the NFL with the Giants, and last year's star running back is also gone off to the NFL with the Bengals, they've got some guys to replace, but I think Altmyer, most notably a quarterback. And then I look to Reggie Love and Josh McCray as two names to look for in the ground attack. But clearly Kansas has the best offensive personnel. Clearly Illinois' defense is most imposing. You look at it from an on-paper, what are your return standpoint, and this is, in KU's case, the most returning offensive production of any team in America, going up against the defense that led America in allowing the fewest points a year ago. Yes, they've lost some faces in the secondary, but a lot of big-time talent returns for Coach Bielema's team. And so, to me, offense versus defense, who wins as two Goliaths lock horns on Friday night? That's going to be fun. But as you and I know in doing these reports together for 7 or 8 years, many times when we lock in on that one particular matchup, the KU offense versus the vaunted Illinois defense, sometimes it's an overlooked matchup that ends up breaking the back of the opponent or deciding the game. Maybe it's a big play in special teams. Maybe the KU defense gets a scoop and score or a pick six, and that's what breaks it here. But just looking at it from a 20,000-foot overview, I mean, it's most definitely their returning defensive talent versus our returning offensive talent. Something's got to give. Let's see who blinks first tomorrow night.
So you look from week one to week two. They say that you make your biggest improvements from week one to week two. What is the, when you've talked to the coaching staff so far this week, and then your own opinion as well in regards to what maybe you see, you're looking for some maybe a little bit different than the coaches, maybe you guys are all in agreement. What is Coach Leipold really looking at here in week two compared to week one? And clearly, if Daniels can go at quarterback, that's a whole different dynamic, even though Bean played well last week.
Yeah, I think that's the big one, and it comes at a great time because of those pass rushers that I mentioned earlier in Randolph and Newton. Because while Bean is really fast, Jalen is so great at assessing the pressure, twisting and contorting his body to get out of it, and then making something that's not there. Jason can run to the edge and blow by you, but Jalen's really good at hanging in there, kind of looking like a matador, dodging bulls, and then step up and throw 60 yards on a penny down the field right on the money to make the play. You know what I mean? And so that's where he is so critical in a matchup like this, where you would expect them to have a lot of defensive pressure coming. In terms of improvements from week one involving guys that did play, I mean, clearly there's little things Kansas can do a better job of across the board. But by and large, you know, it was a pretty clean performance. I think, you know, there were a couple of ticky-tack penalties. The personal foul obviously was costly on the scoring drive early in the ball game that fueled Missouri State. But Coach Leipold didn't have a huge issue with that one when he went back and looked at it on film. But obviously you can chew up a few mistakes there. I think that, you know, Daniel Highshot's a guy that isn't typically going to put the ball on the carpet. That was just a little bit of rust and trying too hard to get an extra yard when you hadn't played in the year. But I liked, you know, the push they got off the offensive line. I liked the way they won in the trenches on both sides. It's just really hard to compare that, Wade, against an FCS Missouri Valley team to going up against a Big Ten team that won 8 games a year ago. So it's hard for me to say this or that needs to be better, because I know it's going to be exponentially tougher to just replicate those same things this week, if you follow my drift. But I think that, you know, there's some timing that could still be better on some of the routes that were run. But again, you're going to have a different quarterback with a different rapport more than likely thrown to these guys. So we'll see. But I thought, by and large, the receivers looked good. Before Grimm went out with an injury, he had 4 first-half catches, and we saw some big plays vertically made by both Skinner and Arnold. So a lot to like from that first one. But I think maybe the week of assessing improvement will come between weeks 2 and 3 this year, just because this week's test is much more indicative of what you're going to face the rest of the way, as opposed to last week, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's exciting that we're into the college football season, and certainly you see there's the potential, as you talked about last week, for this Kansas offense to be extremely special and be one of the best in the country again this year. And if special teams can improve and the defense can, you know, at least carry their weight maybe a little bit more than they did the second half of last season, then I think it's certainly possible to get to those numbers that you and I talked about last week, you know, 7-5, 8-4, maybe 9-3, or you can dream even bigger. And that's a great thing about early in the season, unless you trip up early against somebody, is that everybody feels very confident or they're optimistic in what can happen. And it's the first time in quite some time that we have, you know, Jayhawk Nation optimistic about the football team. And that's got to be so refreshing, not only for the fan base, but for you as a broadcaster and everybody on the broadcasting team, because I would imagine there's a bit of a more of energy, of course, at the stadium. And then when you guys walk around and talk to people in the community, there's just got to be a different buzz, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a completely different feel. You know, we had 41,000 there on Friday night last week. The place holds 47. They're hopeful to flirt with that 47 this Friday night. And to have that kind of atmosphere, that kind of buzz and energy, to have national radio calling, you know, wanting spotlights for kids, and ESPN's going to do all kinds of TV features walking around with our Jayhawks prior to this game. I mean, it's a completely different feel in terms of just being relevant, recognized, and a team that excites people, that they want to be a part of, whether they're a season ticket holder or driving in from Beloit to check them out on a Saturday later in the season. We want to, you know, be that type of club that maybe can't, you know, move the needle and make headlines like Coach Prime in Colorado, but we want to be headline generators in our own rights. And I think Kansas is one of the more, you know, buzzworthy teams that just 3 years ago nobody was talking about. And so just wait until you get Jalen Daniels fully going and you got this offense cooking with gas. And if they could race out to another 4-0 start, should that happen, you head down to Austin, Texas, and this is a team probably ranked in the top 15 if that was the case. Now, that's a lot of ifs and buts.
Sure.
They could lose tomorrow night. But there is a path to 4-0 if you win tomorrow night. And I'm just saying, this will be one of the most talked about teams when they make their return to Austin, where this whole program under Lance Leipold really got its first jolt of momentum. You know, 2 years ago, think how far we've come since that Jared Casey catch in overtime to beat UT, and to think that return trip to Austin is just 3 weeks away. My, oh my, what a difference this program has made in the 2 years that have followed that momentous win. And hopefully they head down there with a great month of September already mostly behind them and a whole lot of buzz and steam as well.
All right, time for the off-the-wall question. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency. So I'm watching the U.S. Open, and I played tennis in high school. I think you played some tennis as well. And I'm just watching the U.S. Open, how hot it is, how these guys are just hitting ball after ball, and like a game within a set is taking 12, 14 minutes, and they're just exhausted, and they're getting beaten down, but yet they're still playing at a high level. And so the question for you is, what sport do you appreciate the most that you don't broadcast? So exclude any sport that you do play-by-play for now for the University of Kansas. What sport do you really highly respect or appreciate, whether it's watching it or maybe you actually, tried it and played it and you're like, oh my, that's a lot, something like that.
Well, I'd love to give you the answer of the International Federation of Competitive Eating that we talked about.
Oh, come on now. No. You did that before. You used the eating thing before. All right, come up with something other than the eating. How's that? You got another one?
But I've actually attended that one live in person.
That's right. You told us about that. That's right.
I do consider it a sport. So
yeah.
I would love to give you that answer. It would just be a retread based on a previous question.
Not letting you do that. Nope, not going to happen.
I'll tell you, it's not super interesting, but you referenced that I now play tennis in my 40s. Three times a week, and I've really started to study the nuances of the game, especially as a guy whose body doesn't move as quickly as it used to. How to hit certain shots to spin and touch and feel, different angles to take, to make sure that my opponent, if they are quicker, still can't get to the ball. And so I played it a little bit in high school, but really got into it later in life, and that's one now that I find myself really mesmerized with. And I'm not to the point where I'm going to cash in my racket for a pickleball paddle and do that just yet. But man, it's amazing to see the phenomenon that's become and how that's swept the nation. I tried to play it a little bit over the summer. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different set of muscles, different muscle group. It's much more hamstring and quads, and you're just kind of jumping around in a 15 by 15 foot box, whereas tennis is a little more sideline to sideline, net to back, all that. But those racket sports, I think, are ones that in our middle age, we can appreciate a little bit now that my days of running up and down the basketball court are probably behind me.
Yes.
And then I'll get into golf more later in life. But right now, while I can still work up a sweat and feel good about it, I'm really enjoying getting back into tennis.
I play pickleball once a week, and I really enjoy it. And there's no doubt that the fact that I played tennis in high school helps me on the pickleball court, because there's a lot of similar strokes, but it is a different game, as you mentioned, a more condensed court. That is a very popular sport now in America, although I don't think it's that entertaining to watch on television, to be quite frank with you. And the other sport I'd throw out there that I've seen in person, and there's no way I could do it, is hockey players. Have you ever seen a fat hockey player? I mean, it doesn't happen. You got to skate. You got to stop on a dime. You take a hit into the boards, and you still have to focus on hand-eye coordination, hit this little tiny circular puck into this net that is blocked by a guy with a ton of body armor, like Gladiator. That sport, to me, is just amazing. The athletes, they don't get enough credit in hockey.
Completely agree. And that's one of those that you and I might not sit down and watch a game on TV ever. But if you have a chance to see it live,
awesome.
And you can fully appreciate the speed of the game, sitting behind the glass, and you see these guys crash up against it, and they're just going all out and with no regard for their bodies or anything, because they're all about that puck and making the big stop and all that. It's such an impressive display of speed, strength, toughness, will, all that. And yet, we didn't really grow up around that sport,
No. So
we're not, baptized into it. But I'm telling you, man, if you ever get a chance to see an NHL game live, it is pretty special.
It is awesome, and I appreciate the guys giving up their front teeth And
yeah.
that's the reason right there. I want to keep my pearly whites as long as I can. Hey, man, I greatly appreciate your time as always. It's always a pleasure to talk to you every single week on a Thursday to talk KU football. And have another great call tomorrow night on a Friday. Should be a good one, Illinois and KU.
Way, my man. Thanks so much. Pleasure as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Brian Haney, he is the voice of the KU Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday on the ticket by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.